Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Regretsville, hosted by Soren and Joss. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Tracy, and we have a wonderful guest for you today, Joanna Hausman. Hello.
Hello, everybody.
I gotta give you a little bio. I gotta do a little background for Joanna. So Joanna is a Venezuelan American comedian, writer, and actor who gained popularity through her YouTube videos that tackle identity, Latino culture, and language. Very true.
Wow.
And her viral creations have garnered over 40 million views and have
That's
been featured.
Lot.
It's a lot.
That's a lot of views.
It's so many. She's been featured in places like CNN, The Huffington Post, BuzzFeed, NPR, and BBC. Joanna is the correspondent on Netflix's upcoming series, Bill Nye Saves the World.
Wow.
Set to premiere, well, it's coming out this week. I mean, the episode, but you have to check it out.
Absolutely.
ASAP. It will be on.
It will be on by the time this is out.
So oh, please, when this is out, it's on.
Please,
you know what I mean?
Please watch episode 2 and 13.
Our friend is
Don't watch any of
famous.
The other ones. 2 and 13, baby. Those are the ones with our girl.
It's our friend is... We have a friend that is going to be famous.
We have a friend who's famous, which is so
just
fun.
Just so, like, it's not a regret I have. It's like, I will never have that regret, like, having a
famous friend. I have a famous friend. I see her. And I've been with Joanna, though, and literally she gets recognized.
Oh, my God. Wait, I've been
with her. Remember at the Lego store we were together?
Yeah.
And, a girl came up. I literally took the pictures because I was like, I have a famous friend, and that's fine, and that's us. And she's so sweet to them, and they're so sweet. And it's so crazy that people, like, look at her.
My favorite part is that the two of you are at the Lego store. Like, what the fuck were you guys doing at the Lego store?
It was raining. We were like, Lego store. We must.
I really just wanted to understand the concept. And I was like, Jesse, we had our coffee. Mm-hmm. We had our fun. We got to go.
We got to go Lego. Yeah.
This Lego store. It's very self-explanatory. It's just a bunch of Legos.
Listen, but what they do in there, can we call it art? Can we call it art? There are dragon Legos. I'm talking.
Oh, they have a whole. Sounds
I mean,
like a specialist.
It's a lot.
So, Joanna, just so you know, we do a regret of the week. We're going to do our regret of the week, and then we're going to get to your nice regret, and we're going to have a fun conversation.
I love this.
I love that. It's regret of the week, baby. Sit tight. And as I like to say,
sit tight. Yep. That's what Jesse was going to do. That's her favorite joke. She just repeats the same. It's going to get old, guys. We're going to see it.
I don't know if it will, though. Do you want to start?
Sure. So I did a little bit different for my regret of the week because it's my last week in my 20s. I'm turning 30 on Monday.
Yikey.
So I tried to do a regret. Yikey, mama. As Jesse will tell you, I've been 30 since I've been 12. So it's really not, it's not so much of a difference. But so I tried to think of like a what's your regret I have for my 20s. Right? Like
big,
all those like lists of like things you're supposed to do before you're 30.
Mm.
I hate 99% of the things they say on that list. Like I'm not that social. I can't do it. But I will say I have two regrets, one broad and one, you know, a little more personal.
Yeah.
The first one is I wish I quit doing spoken word poetry earlier.
Well,
I quit at like 24 and I wish I just like knocked it right out when I left college. I wish I didn't go. I actually, after I graduated college early, I went back to coach the team as a graduated
person. Honestly,
this
is my favorite fact about you that I've ever heard in my life.
I wish I quit it earlier. It was such a depressing, sad situation for me.
It was also probably very confusing time.
A lot of breathing.
I started to do comedy. Comedy, you know, that's not
comedy.
Yeah. So that's my personal regret. And then the larger regret is that I didn't, according to the list, I was supposed to have a workout routine way earlier.
Ooh.
I was supposed to not enter my 30s without a workout routine. And I'm flailing and I'm failing.
The fact that, I mean, what's a routine? I'll say that. I don't know. For me, I guess my routine is I walk in the gym, I go to my machine. I speak to no one and then I leave.
Jesse has
that a
routine. Or you poop your brains out of that one too.
That's after though. Not before, my friend.
No.
Well, I mean, I'll say this. Instead of having a workout routine, I wish I just like started to work out.
Okay I'll take
like that.
And that I'll take. And that I'll take.
That's
I
very
appreciate
easy.
That.
You could change that. Today,
but now I'm going to turn 30, and can I?
Aren't you stuck in your ways when you turn 30?
I'm so stuck in my ways.
No one's changing at 30.
So, Jesse, what's your regret of the week?
You know, I thought about it, and I said to myself, It's Sunday. Sunday is my regret of the week because I have this thing where I like to just be around people. I like to be doing things. If I'm in my bed too long, I go, am I in a depression again? Because I'll tell you what, when I was, mama didn't leave bed. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And when I did, it was a slow, long, hard, draining, miserable process. So I said, but I was tired and I said, I'm going to lay in bed on Sunday, which was like a beautiful day. And people kept saying, it's so beautiful out, so beautiful out. And I was like, but is it beautiful? Or am I going to stay in bed all day? Mm-hmm. And I did stay in bed all day pretty much. And then I felt like, ooh, was that bad? I felt like, ooh, was that bad? I think I regret it because I don't know what relaxing is. No. I don't think I know what it is. And I don't think it can be for me lying in a bed. That's no. what I'll say. I think for me it can be a long, long, slow walk in the park. But I got to get up. I don't think it's – I can't.
Are you the same way, Joanne? I feel like –
I'm literally the same person.
That's so funny.
The moment I'm most relaxed is when I'm working. I'm like, yes. I got work. I'm relaxed. And then when it's like a Sunday and I'm just chilling, I'm like – this is death.
This is what death feels like.
Can I ask an honest question?
Yeah.
Because you both have ADD. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Do we think that, because I'm surrounded, a lot of comedians I know, so many comedians that I worked with have ADD or dyslexia, which mm-hmm. Jesse both had. And I'm in the opposite. I'm like, I don't want to be near a human. It's very hard for me to be near people a lot. Mm-hmm. And you two are always like social, people.
Absolutely.
So I wonder if it's like a thing of, because I feel like your brains are always going. You're always on the next thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So to be laying, it's like it must feel
the brain
very...
is just going, I think.
The only way I can concentrate on like a show, for example, is if I'm drawing or playing a dumb game on my
iPhone. I always am playing Sudoku or I'm coloring.
I can't just watch something because
no,
my brain
I can't.
Gets
I'll
distracted.
Lose it. I'll
I need
lose
to
it.
Do two things at the same time in order for me to focus.
That's what I say. I always brainstorm at the gym because I'm like, if I'm just sitting brainstorming, I can't brainstorm. But if I'm doing something else, I can be brainstorming.
Yes.
There you
Jesse.
Go.
Oh my God.
I'm different.
Different. What is different? I am different. Poems rhyming.
Poems, breath. Yeah. Life.
Oh God. Every friend
I tell you what,
used
it's
to have.
True though.
Because me and Jesse have had to get to that place as partners mm-hmm. where it's like we're very different.
Yeah.
And I, you know, but now we're at a happy medium. I think we realize of who we are as humans.
Yeah.
And how your brain works is something that you have to learn about yourself.
Yeah.
And it, you know, growing up, I didn't realize that the way that I function is very particular and it can't be compared to anybody else.
Right.
So I know my brain as an adult now way more, and I know the tricks to trick my own brain. You know what I mean? Because I can feel very depressed very quickly if I don't keep myself busy.
Mm-hmm.
And I can also get really sad if I am not around people. So what do? I just trick my brain and I'm busy and I'm around people literally all the time to just like scare the depression away.
My mom says, when I haven't heard from you and when you're really busy, I know you're happy.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a healthy thing? I don't know.
That's so funny. My mom literally goes, slow the fuck down. You're going to be miserable. It's so funny. That's why we like, if we see each other in a weekend, it's a big deal. Because
it is a big deal.
I need like to be by myself.
My boyfriend is like that. He can be with me, but he regenerates by being at home.
Yeah.
And just being in his little pajamas and his little flip-flops with the socks on.
Yep.
And I'm like, I wake up and I'm like, I need a... go run or be exhausted or go to a museum or be with a friend or be eating. I just need to be doing something to stimulate my brain, because if not, I'm going to start thinking about things, overthinking and just, you know, I just need to live my life. I can't just like be. The concept of just being is exhausting.
Exhausting. Like sometimes on vacation, I'm so stressed because my parents are like, let's go to the beach and we'll just sit there. And I'm like, by sit, do you mean not move? And then I'm like, okay, I'm going to lose it. Do I bring a magazine? What kind of magazine? Am I writing things? I'm going to go on a walk. I'm going to listen to music. I'm going to go on a walk. I like have to give myself things
to
do.
Listen to a podcast.
Yeah. The thing is, it's
like this one.
Yeah.
I will say again, as I'm turning 30, nobody recognizes this in their early 20s.
Mm-hmm,
no one looks at a friend and goes, that's what you need. That's what I need.
Yeah.
That's why you get a lot of fight.
Yeah.
You get a lot of fights.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I used to get frustrated with some of my friends. Like, you don't want to hang out with me? And it's like, you know what? That person needs to be hanging out by herself in
no
her
idea.
House. And I totally understand that. Or this person is just more of an introvert. Or,
yes.
You know, every person is so different and needs different things. And I think the friendships that I have now in my, like right now are the healthiest. And I think about my friendships earlier in my life and they were weird.
Totally. Yeah.
They're codependent and you form yourself to the person because you want friends versus totally. People respecting who you are right. and how your brain works. Look at how you were able to describe Jesse so quickly.
Isn't that beautiful? A lot of my metaphors have to do with drowning, and let me explain. Let me explain. I think that in your early 20s, okay, you're exhausted and you're in a pool, so you are flailing. You're flailing. You're grabbing people as like anyone you can grab, which really you're all sinking each other. So you're grabbing, you're sinking, you're flailing, you're grabbing. Then when you come 30, you go, I'm going to relax, which by the way, then you float. Am I wrong? Then you float.
I mean, especially if you're in the Dead Sea.
Exactly. You're in the Dead Sea. You're floating. And then the people that you cross, like you choose to cross with. But it's like because you're able to relax about it, you're not like it, in your 20s, I would describe as just exhausting.
Because you're trying to survive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very hard.
You're not just trying to survive economically or whatever. You're trying to survive in the sense of trying to figure out your place in the world because – in your early 20s, you're like, oh my God, the world is my oyster.
Yes.
Yeah. Mid 20s, you're like, the world is a dumpster fire. What the fuck am I doing?
Mid 20s is the worst.
And then late 20s, you're like, okay, now I think I know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
I just got to practice what I preach because I preach a shit ton.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. We all go to that podium before we're ready. Absolutely. We're preaching. We're learning and we're preaching.
Absolutely.
Well,
this was a beautiful opener. Joanna, we want to know about your regret.
Yeah.
You know, I originally, before coming in today, I was thinking really hard about my regret. And I realized I don't really feel the feeling of regret very often. My mm-hmm. boyfriend feels regret all the time. And I'm always very mad at him. And I say coulda, shoulda, woulda. Like, right. I hate that concept. But I realize that I do have regrets. I just always try and find the learning point in
great.
It. So it's never a regret. But I actually have a regret. And it's embarrassing. And I was going to tell a story that was, like, very uplifting and very, like, great about, like, you know, not feeling ready in the world. But, you know, I'm going to tell you a real story. I'm going to tell you a story.
That's what we're here for.
I don't know what the fuck the lesson is behind it. It's just an incredibly embarrassing story.
We're going to find it.
We'll see if we find it.
So in college, I'm gonna paint you a picture. It's my junior year of college. It's, you know, fall. And I'm very insecure. I've had one boyfriend in my life. And he was not great. And he was just, I mean, I'm sure he's a fine person. He's just literally the worst person for me. Holla, did you hear that? Did you hear that car?
Yeah. The car honked. And it's like, I've dated him.
He was
him
like,
well.
One boyfriend? How?
One boyfriend who was far too pop. Like, I needed a nerdy, cool guy. Not like a cool guy. Well, I was very insecure. And I had a very big crush on a young gentleman who was a year younger than me, and he was an asshole, to be totally honest with you. Let's call him Alejandro.
Okay. Alejandro, we're here.
Alejandro. He was a Latin Jew, just like me, in my college.
Okay.
And for me, I was like, you know, this is perfect, you know? And he was an attractive man, but he was morally bankrupt, and I just ignored that because I was insecure.
Sure.
Such a funny term. I'm sorry. It's like he had nothing.
Yeah. He had nothing. He was like, he was in the negatives.
Yeah.
But for me, I was like, oh, I think that's how men are, right? They're supposed to be morally bankrupt and treat women like shit. That's the stasis.
That's what love is.
I genuinely wish my young self could see my boyfriend now and realize what she deserved.
Yeah.
But you know what? Let's just wait a second for that. Anyway, so I had a very big crush on this monster. And he was in the same survey class I needed to take for my history major. And he missed the first couple weeks of class. I didn't know why. But then he texted me and he was like, hey, girl, like, what's up? And I'm like, hey, boy. And he was like, yo, I know that we have like a paper due on Monday. I was wondering if like maybe I could go to your house and like hang out and like talk about it. And I'm like, shut the fuck up. Go take a shower, shave my legs, obviously.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, I get all cute and I put on makeup, and then he arrives, and he had never been that nice to me. He was actually kind of a dick. But that day he was being so sweet to me, so kind. And I was like, oh my God, I think he likes me now. And the ridiculous part of the story is that he started hitting on me for the first time in my life because he had never hit on me, even though I liked him. And then, like, we, like, kissed and whatever. And I was like, oh, my God, like, I can't believe this is happening. And then after all this, like, romance, he was like, hey, do you think you can send me your essay? Just because I already wrote mine. I haven't been in class, and I just want to make sure that, you know, my essay is, like, on par with what you guys have been. And I'm like, oh, my God, of course.
Oh, God.
You man, like, you sweet child, of course. Oh, my God. We just
my lover.
We just made out, like, in my room, and, like, you're my next boyfriend, and this is amazing. Jump cut to Monday morning.
I'm so nervous.
And I'm in class, and by the way, this professor already hated me. It was an Ottoman Empire class.
He hated
and,
himself, or she hated him.
He genuinely didn't like me. This had never happened to me in my life, but he didn't like me already. And you know, this was, I think, the second class after we were hanging out in my room with Alejandro, and the professor. When class is dismissed, he's like, Alejandro and Joanna, can you please stay? And I was like, yeah, of course. And he's like, do you think I'm a fucking idiot? And I was like, what? And he's like, do you think I'm a fucking
oh my God.
Idiot? And I'm like, what? And he's like, you guys plagiarized. These two essays are exactly the same with some, like, prepositions changed. And you realize that this can get you kicked out of school.
No.
And I was like, I didn't know what to say. And I was like, because I like this guy, but I wrote my essay.
Yeah.
This was my essay. And he had just copied it and used me. And so I was like, listen, I think this is a huge misunderstanding. And then Alejandro was like, hey, like, we worked on this essay together, like, and I was like, you fucking asshole. And I said, actually, no, we didn't work on this essay together. But then I was like, but I think this is a big misunderstanding, but I didn't have the balls to say the truth.
Yeah.
And then the teacher's like, I'm gonna fail you out of this class and you're not gonna get your major. And then he walked away. And for me, that's one of my biggest regrets is not standing up for myself. And I think it just comes from this sense of insecurity and feeling like I deserve to be treated like that.
Oh.
But looking back, I'm like, girl, what? Like, that's insane that you did. That's an insane thing that you did. And that you protected someone that genuinely didn't care about you. And that was a really big regret of mine is I knew in the back of my head this guy was taking advantage of me, and I just didn't own up to it. And then I did afterwards have the courage to go to the professor and explain to him that, like, I didn't know he was going to copy my paper. And he was like, I'm still going to give you an F on that paper, but you can still pass. You can still pass
Bless
the class.
Him. I'm so glad I wasted time on that paper. Yeah.
So I passed the class. I mean, I got like a B, but, like, you know, that paper really, I had a great GPA. Oh. For me, that was one of my biggest regrets that I think resonates with so many of my regrets, which was, I think, not treating myself the way that I think I deserve to be treated and not defending myself. And it's so weird, but right now my boyfriend is so important in me checking the world. He's like, you don't deserve to be treated like that, or, like, don't let that person treat you like that. And it's so sad that I had to wait to be with him to, like,
right,
to understand my place in the world and how I deserve better. But I genuinely felt like that was all my fault. And then I really regret not standing up for myself in that instance.
This guy's a motherfucking piece of shit.
Yeah, I genuinely, and I look back and I remember my now boyfriend liked me back then. And I said no to him because, like, I like boys like this one. And that's the like, a macro regret is I thought that these people were good for me and not the people that.
But
really,
you had to learn. I'll say that, you know, or then you would regret not being with the hot guy.
Yeah, I know. Needed to go through that horrible stage, and then
I mean, he wasn't good at all, though. I mean, no, he was real. He was real. Shit.
What the fuck does he do now? What is he?
I don't know. I think he lives off his parents. He generally doesn't do anything.
Okay, is that not a is that a shock that he's living off somebody else?
Sounds like
down the road he
living
was on.
Off working. You know,
I think as a woman though, it is very difficult. I have to check myself like all the time all about the time. Am I conducting myself in like a way that I, what is it? I'm standing up for myself. I'm not apologizing for things. I'm like doing my business. I'm doing what I'm like what I should be doing. I don't need to apologize. Like I work hard. Like, am I giving myself respect? And then it's obviously easy to see in my friends or other people.
It's
I
so
think.
Much easier yeah. to have perspective on other people's situation. I genuinely, if this had happened to my friend, I'd be like, girl, what the hell are you doing?
I but know.
I'm in it and all I want is approval and someone to like me and for me to feel good about myself. And then in reaction to it, you end up fucking yourself over.
Yeah. 100%. Every day I'm like, Tracy, don't say you're sorry. Like, look in the mirror. Give yourself a pep stock. I'm sorry if that was aggressive the way I said that to you. And then we're like,
A pep stock.
Yeah. This is the thing. Did I say pep stock?
You did.
Probably.
I need you to pep yourself up to stalk other human beings. Absolutely. Pep yourself up to stalk.
Absolutely.
It's a pep talk
and a pep stock.
Wait, what's the stock?
It was just a moment.
I think I love it.
Interesting. A stock.
No, we always catch ourselves like we
cut that out.
You know, as like somebody who has to advocate for yourself as like comedians or whatever, you have to always advocate for yourself, always advocate or like, you know, to do this job, you always have to advocate yourself. And whenever we're in meetings, we always have to be like, we said this today. We're like, would a man talk like that? Would a man in our position feel like they had to like lie to get an answer? Or the amount of exclamation points, just wondering.
Would
just
you mind
checking,
the word just?
Just. I know. It's fucking insane.
I feel like I'm a guest in this world.
Oh, wow.
You know when you're
what
when
a soundbite.
You know when you're a guest in someone's house and you got to be very cautious and careful and apologetic? That's how I feel in the world.
We got to start hosting, baby.
And you
got
to start hosting. There's no reason to. And I catch myself like, oh my God, thank you so much. Oh my God, yeah. Oh my, this is our world as well. Mm-hmm. But we are conditioned to feeling like guests in a world that isn't really owned by women, right?
Yeah.
So I really am very conscious. And I think us three are.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that I'm not guilty of apologizing when I don't need to and feeling guilty when I don't need to. I'm like, I hate staying in people's houses because I feel like I owe them something and I can't live my life in a world where I feel like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. The other thing is like, I think, you know, all of us, especially in college, dated the dick, dated the asshole who was like, you know, sort of like, he was so like, hot. It was like hot to like be treated that way. And then you look back and you're like, you know, luckily I think in this room we all had, you know, I believe fathers who were there.
The best.
Now that it matters, honestly, because, you know, you could be raised by a single parent. I'm not trying to say that. You know, my boyfriend was raised by a single mother, is the best boyfriend we've ever seen. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's like people think that it comes from your parents or your father, your relationship. It's not that. It comes from society. Like, it comes from this idea that, like, you feel like they're gonna give you something or that you have to get their attention. Like, I remember, like, and I'm a pretty aggressive person, I feel like, and I'm just like, I still was like being pushed around by this asshole and I'm like, what the fuck was I do? And you know,
but I will say this, like, I know you said yes, I think it is society. I do think that I think people are predisposed to different things and everyone's so different, so maybe, you know, if I was a single parent, let's say hypothetically, and I had a kid who just was predisposed to be a good person,
right, yeah.
It didn't really matter if he had a father or not, like this person would just be good. I do think that in general, in particular, women who don't have a male in their life that tells them that they're great, they tend to, in this world that isn't ours most of the time, feel indebted and feel like they deserve to be treated poorly. And my mother always told me, my mother's dad, my grandfather, was a very big advocate for her. And she didn't have a great experience with her first husband at all. He was an asshole. And he told my mom, like, you don't need anybody. This is your mm-hmm. family and you can always come home. And that was when she had the strength to leave him. And I think that so few people in the world, I feel, have that. And yeah. I think a parent, like, parents really do have a big effect on people that maybe could be one way or another. They could yeah. be in, you know, abusive relationships. Mm-hmm. I really do think, as a kid, thinking about my mom and my dad and their effect on me, like, they made me feel like, yeah, I dated assholes, but I never had, like, this was the biggest abuse I've had. And I, you know, that whatever, right. it wasn't even a guy that I dated. Like, this guy was, I erased him from my life. But I have so many friends that don't have great parents, and or their father's not in their life, or their mother dated horrible people, and I see them mimicking the same thing that they saw growing up, and it's just so sad.
I think you go one way or the other. It's like, if your parents are a smoker, you're either gonna, like, I always said that, like, yeah. I had friends whose parents were smokers. It's like, they were like puffing and puffing, or they're like, I'm never going to touch it. I fucking hate it. Yeah. Don't smoke a cigarette.
That's a very intelligent, you know what I mean? Observation.
It's like
the extremes. It's like, either right. you like that, or you avoid right. that at all costs.
I think something I learned as an adult, which was, like, very big for me, is, like, that I'll always have to save myself. Like, ultimately people mm-hmm. and my father and men in my life can tell me, you know, you deserve more, but ultimately I'm the one that's going to be in all mm-hmm. those rooms. I'm the one that's going to be, like, I run my life. I mm-hmm. am myself, and I need to be able to save myself. I need to be able to say, I'm going to say it a certain way, or I know what I deserve.
Right.
Because that's the person that needs to do it. Like, mm-hmm. people can tell you over and over again, and until you believe it, it's nothing. And then when they're not there doing it because they have things going on in their life, like, you need to be able to do it. So it's reminding yourself, like, I am worth it. Am I happy in this? Like, do I feel valued? Am I growing from this? Mm-hmm. And then being like, I deserve better. And absolutely. I can figure my way out of this.
Well, I think the best thing my father ever told me was, you don't need anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're great. And that's it. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. you don't need anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to trust yourself. Yeah. And that is, I think, the wisest thing I learned. Well, it isn't like find no, it's yeah. you don't need it. You don't need anybody. If you want people in your life, that's mm-hmm. great, but you right. don't need anything other than yourself.
Yeah. It makes having relationships a lot easier.
Yes.
When you don't feel like there's a need.
Pressure, yeah.
Well, when there's a need, it becomes unhealthy. Right, it's great yeah. to feel. I love the feeling that my boyfriend doesn't need me.
Right.
Because he wants me around. And right. I don't need him, but my life is so much better with him yeah. around. I mean, it's a choice. And feeling like a choice every day actually feels great, because I clearly make his life better and vice versa. It isn't a codependent situation that if it gets bad, you're still there. Or right, if, yeah, you know, yeah.
mm-hmm.
it has to be a choice every day. And I think that's the best, is waking up and being like, absolutely, this is what I want. Not,
I need this. Oh, my God.
You know, what a...
And
what
that's any relationship. I hear my friends say mm-hmm. they're in jobs that make them miserable.
Or even friendships.
Friendships, yeah. But they don't... But I'm like, are you looking? Like, when are you leaving? And it's like, they feel stuck when it's like, you're not. You know, you can make a choice. You are smart enough. You're going to be able to find another job, you know?
Yes.
So go. So leave. So choose happiness.
Mm-hmm. It's... You guys, listen, Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn.
Wow. What a reference I'll about reference to come them. At you.
They've been together for like 30 some odd years. They both had marriages beforehand, and everyone's always like, why aren't you married? Why aren't you married? Why aren't you? And they were like, because they're much happier having the choice. I always say that, because people look at me and they're like, why aren't you married? You were together for 6 years. Why aren't you married? It's like this, one of those things of like, I always was like, I wake up every day and I go, I choose you. And the day, we always say, if it's the day we don't choose each other, we'll deal with it then. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a much easier way to be. That's why I like freelancing, though. I will say the job thing gets hard.
It really does.
Like, having it, you yeah. do, like, when you're working a full-time job and you're sitting there, you get sort of stuck, you know?
I really don't like it. And jobs, and I think friendships, I've had to let go of wonderful people that are bad for me.
Yeah, totally.
And it's something that as we were talking about earlier, early 20s, I didn't have the perspective of saying this person isn't making me feel like a great this person doesn't add anything. It actually, she actually, or he actually subtracts to my happiness or my life. Yeah. There's literally no point in having this person around, even though they're cool or they have cool interests or they're cool people. They're just not good for me. And I think it all goes back to that regret. And I regret having people that took energy and self-esteem away from me. And I had a lot of those. I had so many of those people. And now I'm very aware. And I purposely, I get friend crushes all the time.
Right.
Like, I had a friend crush on Jesse before I even became her friend. And then I had a friend crush on Tracy.
Thank you.
Because I was like, these people make me feel so good about, and I hope I do the same for them. Mm-hmm. And I think friendships are the example of the simplest relationship you need to have in your life. A relationship with your job is always complicated. A relationship with your family can get complicated. Relationship with pretty much everything except for friendship can get complicated. Friendship needs to be the simplest relationship that you have.
Wow. Mm. Look at that.
That's interesting, because I think that is true. But at the same time, like, my longest friends that I've had, we've gone through many an up and down, and they've been complicated with people going in and out of their life and sort of watching them change and figuring out how to hopefully stay in their life and find your new place, since everyone's evolving.
Haven't you found that with maturing, your new place is a simpler place? Like, it isn't, I don't know, I was very caught up in many of my friends, and then we've had very difficult times and tumultuous times together. And then the new friendship we've created is one that's more simple and more, it's just like, I don't know, it's like clearer.
Well, then aren't we all clear? I think when you get older and you're like, you know, it's very hard when you're young to go, no, I don't want to do this. No, this isn't for me. No, I don't want to go out. I'm not that person. Like, if I was very aware of myself when I was younger, I would have known I need a lot of time to readjust. I need a lot of time away from people. But I didn't realize this until like a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like one of those things where you're like, I think things seem simpler because you become older and you become like, I know what I need.
Yeah.
Like, being for a woman to be able to go no, like, you know, in terms of like anyone should, for anyone to be able to go no, I don't want to do something is big. But especially for women who are always told to be like complacent and and go along with the flow. I don't know. I think the older you get, guys, the brighter and the easier it gets, because you stop caring. You start caring more about what you want.
Yes.
It makes you feel good and less about what anyone else fucking wants.
I have one of my closest friends did something really terrible to me, and I genuinely don't think I can ever go back to that friendship. And that's something that if I were a little younger, I think I would have buckled under the pressure of keeping this very treasured relationship. But as an adult, I'm like, I genuinely don't know if this is worth it. I got to reassess the situation, and I have no problem cutting this person out of my life, because that's what life is. You got to sometimes let things die, and you can't grasp onto something that's flying away from you. So I think what we were talking about, like, the 20s is a time of like reassessing what makes you happy and reassessing yourself, but also letting go of things that don't make sense. And sometimes that hurts.
Yeah.
Right.
But sometimes it's the best thing long term.
Right.
Right.
Man, guys, we're going to take a little break.
That was deep. Welcome back. Kick your feet up, grab a drink, and do me a favor. Listen tight. Okay, listen tight. I don't know what that means. Listen up. Sit tight.
Listen tight.
Clench your ass.
Listen tight. Clench your asshole.
Honestly, listen, I love tight. That.
That's what my immediate was like. I'm clenching, doing Kegel. I'm doing something down there. Listen tight. What we're here with, we're back with Joanna.
And we are tight with her. And we are back.
Clenching her asshole right now, Joanna.
Thank you so much. Thank you for that imagery. That's what I needed.
I feel like when someone goes, I'm clenching my asshole, my asshole immediately clenches. Yeah. Like, if someone's like, it's weird. It's like, even if someone's like, I've been kicked in the ball, I'm like, ooh, like, am I, you know what I mean?
I think it's a very involuntary area. Yeah. I mean, because think about it. We've all shit our pants. And we've all shit the bed.
We have. Baby.
Well, you haven't shit your pants recently?
Never.
Oh.
And I genuinely have never. I'm just thinking.
Sharded.
You've sharded. No, I swear.
And this.
You've sharded.
I swear I have not.
Maybe.
I have.
And the life
of famous people. They're not something? Like us.
Can I say something?
No,
it's a regret. You're going to regret that because isn't sharding that crazy, is a feeling though? Where it you humble crazy. Yourself.
No, I've thrown up in public several times.
Yeah, well. Penn oh, Station. So you're an up. I'm
an upper. I vomit in trash cans when I'm feeling sick. I
forgot who, there's a stand-up, I forgot who says you are an up or a down. I think it might be Chelsea Peretti, but that I do, you're an up. You vomit. If you're sick, you vomit.
Yeah, like I eat a bad sandwich or bad sushi, I'm going to vom.
Wow, I'm other way.
Yeah, me too.
And you know when I know it's really bad? When I think I'm going both.
That's called the double dragon?
Oh, it's called,
the what sink is of it? The sink of the toilet?
It's when the sink of the when you bend over. I had when I was a kid, I had something like that. My mother's friend was babysitting me, and she literally came in. She was like, "I once shit and vomited in the trash can at the same time," and it really made me feel so much better. It's on the toilet, and I felt so good. We're not gonna get through a podcast. We're not talking about something bodily movement. Sorry
about it. Sorry, not
tighten
sorry.
Up. Let's tighten listen tight. Up.
Tighten it. Tighten it. Tighten it up. I remember I normally want to take all my clothes off when I'm vomiting.
Oh, 110.
That's me.
110.
I love to feel naked.
There are times when I'm sick, I'm like, if you know when you get immediately hot and you're like, well, yes, and this is what I'm it's going to be.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I drank water from a mountain in Caracas, Venezuela, while I was growing up there. I drank some water. And 12 hours later, I was hallucinating. And I was, my mother's face was really big and red. And everything was just like enormous or tiny. And I was 12. So I was tripping at 12.
Oh my God.
And it turns out I drank rat shit.
No.
Which gives you hallucinations if you metabolize it. So. Oh, welcome.
Wait. So
did it look like water? Did it look like rat shit?
It was just, no, I drank out of a little water fountain that comes from a natural like source.
Why would there be rat?
Because, I mean, it's the mountains and there's no filter.
So did they have to take like a stool sample or something?
Yeah. And then my doctor in Venezuela, he had it's a very particular type of bacteria that if I had come back because I was traveling to Washington, D.C. that night, they would not have known what it was. But in Venezuela, it happens pretty often.
Oh, my God.
And so he was on the phone and he was like, yeah, no, I know what that is. She just needs to get on these antibiotics. But yeah, she's hallucinating off rat shit. And my mom was like, OK, because that's really good news because I thought she was literally possessed by the devil because I was like laughing by myself and like mommy, like it was like literally my mom was like, I thought you were possessed, like it was the creepiest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
Do you regret drinking through the water fountain?
I never drink from water fountains. It traumatized me. I was sick forever.
Shocking off. I would,
have rat shit, you're not going back.
You're never. You
know, it's clear, which no one knew.
It's clear.
It's clear as day.
No one knew.
Yeah.
Well. No, I never drink from water fountains. It was like traumatizing.
I could see that.
I also never have sushi in Latin American countries anymore. Maybe Panama, maybe. But I had sushi in Venezuela and I got amoebas.
Oh my God.
Which is when your intestines bleed.
No. And,
basically growing up, I'm very Jewish and very not, my body's not made for.
No, 110.
For Latin America's bacteria. No, so I got sick so many times. And then, but when I had amoebas, it was my cousin's wedding. And I was like, there's no way I'm not drinking.
Oh my God.
That's one of my biggest regrets. I partied like there's no tomorrow. This was after a week of just sleeping because I was on medication like crazy.
Wow.
And I was passing out in the car because my body was like, you're trying to kill you.
Oh,
what's happening?
God.
And my mom was like, Joanna, did you drink? And I'm like, yes. And my mom was like, Joanna, I told you only one champagne. And I'm like, I had like eight. And I'm like, she was like, you are a dumb teenager. You're going to learn your lesson. And I did because I was sick for 3 hours after I got home and I was vomiting and everything else. For a good 3 hours.
What kind of, so you had raw sushi and
so the sushi I think there's no, like, it's very difficult to know how long the sushi has been out where it comes from, like there's no really the regulations are very different back home. So I got really sick off sushi. Like I legit, I lost like 15 pounds in a week.
You know what though? I need that diet. What is it?
Oh, amoebas.
Amoebas. Mommy need amoebas.
I can't. My mother would, Jewish mother as well, would never let me eat raw sushi, undercooked eggs, anything. We always had well done hamburgers. Now as an adult, I eat raw sushi and I can only eat it if I know I don't have a big thing the next day.
Mm, that's so funny.
It's called PTSD. Not PTSD. PTSD.
That sounds insane.
Yeah, yeah. Jewish bodies can't handle what other, like,
yeah, you know, like I was like, my Latin friends, they were like, all like, I've never gotten as sick as you. Also, I don't have the allergies you do to the environment. And I'm like,
well, because we were always migrating to escape persecution. So we never just like got with it. You know what I mean?
When you're on the run, when you're on the run,
we were on the run. We were eating fucking flat bread or some shit, matzah.
Don't have time for it to rise.
I know.
We couldn't wait for it to rise.
So now we got to be gluten free. You know,
yeah, it's absolutely.
Well, and 80% of Ashkenazi Jews are lactose intolerant. So
for sure,
So
lactaid.
You gotta. I always forget.
And you know what? If lactaid isn't a sponsor, we sponsor it. So there you go. We sponsor lactaid. We really do indeed.
So Joanna, what else? We got a very heartfelt regret.
We loved that regret. We said we love it. We learned.
We didn't love what happened, but we loved the discussion afterwards.
Absolutely.
So is there any other regrets you want to get out? This is your time. It's Regretsville.
God is listening and he hears you.
She hears you.
Very true.
Oh man, she does. So I think, so when I lived in New York before I got my job at Flama, mm-hmm. which is where I started making my YouTube videos, I was freelancing and I was like struggling a bit, but there was no point in the struggle that I enjoyed any part of it. And I think that's my actual like biggest regret, because I still have trouble enjoying my life when I don't know what's happening next. Yeah. And I look back and I wish I had had more fun, and I wish I had taken advantage of my freedom a little more, but yeah. I was so stressed with the future and the uncertainty that I basically sabotaged my year of, you know, being a freelancer in New York. And I should have just trusted stuff more. I don't know, but I was very unhappy, and I shouldn't have been. I shouldn't have been.
I think that freelancing is such an interesting, it's such an interesting thing. You know what I mean? Like, I was very nervous to freelance. I was like, oh God, oh God, oh God. Even though we set up so much of, you know, making sure that we could work together and work separately and all that stuff. And it's one of the things that it's interesting because I always say, like, I feel like my anxiety has gotten, now that I've done the reverse, right? I think if you start freelancing, you start as a freelancer, it's a panic. But if you work full time and then go to freelance, you're like, oh, because I think it's so interesting. I think my anxiety was way worse when I was working full time, because I was like, every day is the same. So I could think about 3 months in advance. But when you have worked this business, I'm like, well, I thought I had a gig and now the company is faulted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't. So I think, I wonder if you would have worked Flama first and then you're freelance now.
Yeah.
Right?
And I'm not enjoying it. But I catch myself in not enjoying it. So like when I have a day off, I'm like, my life is a black abyss, and that's such an irresponsible feeling.
It's not irresponsible.
Yes, it is, because every day you have free, you do what you can as much as you can work, and then you got to take advantage of the fact that you're free, because you can't, once you're booked, you have no chance to breathe. So being unhappy in that time, I find it to be irresponsible, because it's hurtful to me. And it's useless. It's a useless feeling.
Well, this is what I'll also say, because I think I'm similar. And sometimes I go, oh, because then when I'm booked, my freedom's gone. But I also go, but then I'm doing what I love. So why wouldn't I be happy? Like when I'm working, I'm doing what I love, which is crazy. So why wouldn't I be happy then? And when I'm, you know, waiting, I'm waiting to do what I love. So I should find something else I can do that I love in the meantime. But it makes sense that when you're working, you love it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're not, you're just hoping that you can do something you love again.
But I think digging yourself in a hole is, which is what my brain tends to do, is counteractive.
Counterproductive.
Counterproductive, thank you.
Gotcha.
I think I have a tendency of really feeling like, oh my God, like what am I going to do today? Like, I'm going to have to force myself to do all these things that are unnecessary. And you know what? I do kind of love that. It's just, it's, I think it's a, because if I was complacent, I wouldn't be making all the stuff that I'm making.
Right. I schedule myself all the time, every day.
At least work 4 hours a day, even if I have, like, I'm like, I'm going to write some stuff. I'm going to book some things. But I actually, now that you say that, I think it kind of gave me perspective, because I don't know if I regret feeling like that, because maybe if I didn't feel like that, I wouldn't
exactly
say I'm going to shoot this Saturday.
Exactly, because that's when you, why? Because that's what you love. You want to do what you love. You're finding a way to do what you love.
Maybe my biggest regret is being too hard on myself.
Yeah.
Being like, why are you unhappy? You know what? Maybe if I feel unhappy, it's because I really want to do what I love.
Totally. I mean, you're taking
control. This is therapy, guys.
It is therapy.
Hi, welcome to Regretsville.
We always normally do a cheers to our therapist. That's a new thing we're doing. Pamela. Do you have a
Pablo
therapist?
Goldberg.
There you go. And then Julie. Julie and Pamela. Thank you so much.
I'm
going
to see Julie on Friday. Like, you are literally a star.
The star of the podcast.
Am I allowed to listen? I'm like, girl, do you?
Girl, no.
Mine is a fellow Jewish Latino.
Can I say something? Because I feel like I didn't know my therapist. Sorry, I didn't know my therapist was Jewish for like a long time, and then she goes, you know, I'm Jewish, right? And I went, oh my God. Like, I almost was like, like, I literally was like, I cannot believe you're Jewish. Like, it just like, it makes it, it just like, I felt like I talk about that so much, and it really connected. So a Latino Jew, like,
do you want to hear something crazy for me?
You better say it right now.
I felt super Jewish in Boston because I had this rabbi who was amazing, and I did my bat mitzvah, and it was the coolest thing in the world. I read the Torah. I was the first woman in my family to read the Torah. Killing it. We had a guitar at my bat mitzvah. It was amazing. I had a speech. I had a haftarah portion. Killed it.
13 and candles? Then, tell me you did it.
Of course I did. Yeah. And then every candle, I dedicated it to someone. Swag princess. But then I moved to Venezuela, and there was no reform synagogue. Yeah. Everything was Orthodox, and I had to sit separate from my dad. Was like a nightmare for me, because I was like, oh, I have to sit up here and I'm not part of anything. And I wasn't accepted to the Jewish school because my mother wasn't born Jewish. Ugh, and I was like, so maybe I'm not a Jew. So I stepped away from Judaism for a bit, because it was like the same way I stepped away from being a Latina, or the same way I stepped away from being an American. I always had to step away from my identity because I wasn't fully accepted. And now the Jewishness that I love is the New York centric Jew, which is like the Jew of like liberalism, of education, of intellectualism, of narcissism, a little bit, but also like when you think you're sick all the time.
Hypochondriac and neurotic.
That's the Jew I am. I'm neurotic and a hypochondriac, and I'm very proud of it. And for me, my like Jewish side is really critical thinking. It is God a thing? I don't know. My Jewish grandpa who survived the Holocaust, he's like, I don't think God's a thing. And I was like, hey, grandpa, like, I was like, hey, grandpa, what do you think about prayers? And he was like, I think that humans should know that flattery doesn't work. Because Hashem, you are the greatest in the world. And he's like, I don't understand how anybody could say that to anybody. If the God is real, then he won't want to hear this.
That's really interesting.
And I was like, that's the Jew I want to be. I don't, and then also very accepting. And I think, being like from a persecuted background, I think it makes you feel very empathetic towards people that have a hard time now.
Yeah.
And you want to stand up for people that are perhaps seen as evil generalized and seen as a scapegoat. So
yeah,
that's kind of what I really like about my Jewish identity, is being very sensitive to those that are perhaps seen as not great or general, you know, like I my Muslim friends, I feel like I'm closer to them because I'm a Jew, and right. I feel like that's so counterintuitive for so many people.
It's asinine. I'm sorry. Yeah. When all this happened, when like when he became the president, when everything, you know, and like all the no fly, the Muslim ban and all of that, I lost my shit. But I have people, you know that I love or that I know or that, you know, I grew up in a very Jewish neighborhood that think it's okay. And it's like, in what world?
No.
You can't in the same sentence have, you know, raised all these people and have been in this community that was literally, I grew up in a community where it was like, you know, if you didn't say the Holocaust every other day, you weren't speaking. I mean, you know, if you didn't think the Jews like carried you on your whatever, it's like, how could you not equate this?
It's insane.
Where is the disconnect?
Well, I have family members that share on Facebook things against Muslims, and I have to unfriend them because it is like, do you not know, like, are you blatantly unaware of what happened to us? Like,
I think that the fear of it being one of your own again makes you go, oh, let me see if I can highlight another, when really what we have to do is remember that during the time that you're under attack, the only thing you're looking for is other people to go, this isn't right.
Right.
And so if you're in the privileged position that you're not being attacked or called out for something that you have no control over, I think it's scary. It's scary. I mean, you can say it's scary. It is scary. Protests really scare me. But I go, I wish that people had done it for, you know, my people back then. And I hope that I don't look back and regret not standing up for what I know is right now.
It's one of those things. I think that a lot of people, at least because, again, I'm a New York Jew born and bred. And it's one of those things where, you know, very Ashkenazi neighborhood. And it's all those things of like, people get very comfortable in their whiteness.
Yeah.
They get extremely comfortable in their whiteness. They think, but as I was, I grew up not realizing I was white. So it's this weird thing of like, I went to college and I finally went, oh, I'm a white person. Like I was told in high school very often, you're a white person. But like, it wasn't something that was like, oh yeah, but no, but I'm a Jewish white person. That's a fucking completely different thing. But you don't recognize until you sort of grow up. It's the same thing of like in your 20s or you go, if you're lucky enough to have, or privileged enough to access education, you get to realize, oh, this is a thing and these are systematic ways of oppression, blah, blah, blah. But I think that a lot of people who don't force those type of conversations, they just get, if they are white Jews, they get extremely comfortable in their whiteness. They choose their whiteness when they want to choose their whiteness. They choose their Jewishness when they want to choose their Jewishness. They choose persecution when they want to choose persecution. And it's just like, homeboy, get it together. All right.
I agree. And it's been very difficult for me to see people that I very much think are great people and that I want to associate myself with. Genuinely stand for the actual opposite of what I stand for.
Yeah.
And it has been very, and then also this is from the Latino angle. I've seen a lot of Latin Americans, I'm a very proud Venezuelan, you know, stand for things that I think are just inhumane saying that these people aren't allowed here, and like It's even Venezuelans that I, you know, Venezuela is a really tough country. It's going through really the worst time of its history. And then I see them voting for Donald Trump, and I know people that vote for Donald Trump, and they say that they don't like illegal immigrants. And I'm like, you're an immigrant. Are you unaware of...
Right.
Do you realize that this anti-immigration rhetoric isn't exclusive to people that aren't you? This includes you. You are seen as a threat to many people that voted for this person. This is anti-immigration rhetoric. This isn't against a particular type of person. So people like to feel excluded of things that they don't want to be a part of, instead of realizing that everyone that is persecuted or is seen as evil or is seen as a negative or whatever, you have more in common with them than you think. So
yeah,
and there's this this sort of miracle, or not miracle, this what is it called when it's like this absurd, it's insane that it happens. It's like a not an amalgam, it's
miraculous.
It's not good. It's like the negative. It's
it's not a mulligan. That's not what that's called.
That's a mulligan. But the The concept is people that have the least difference between them actually mm-hmm. hate each other more.
Mm.
So the nuance of difference is actually makes you hate each other more versus someone that has nothing to do with you, like nothing about the culture, nothing about their nothing. You don't necessarily tend to hate that person, but when you have something very much in common with someone else, mm-hmm. but there's just that tiny difference, the human beings tend to hate. What's way more us? Easily.
And because hate is you just see, fear.
Because you see yourself in them, but there's that difference that you're able to differentiate yourself from them. And that part of human nature is something that I think everyone has to be self-aware of.
Yeah.
I can't.
I think hate is just fear. And I think that it's okay to know that you're afraid of things all the time. And you're afraid of whether it's, you know, you're afraid you aren't educated enough to speak about something. You're afraid that you don't know, like, what is right in a certain situation. You're afraid of a group of people, maybe because you don't have an experience with them. So you go, it can't be good, when really it's like, or you just are sort of unaware or uneducated. I grew up in Virginia, and I was one of six Jews in my high school. Everyone that I grew up with was Republican Catholic. Mm. I think there was a few people of color. But I mean, of course, you don't realize, I think, when you're growing up in that sort of situation. I mean, I knew I felt very different always because I was Jewish. And then when I went to Syracuse for college, and there was so many Jews and so many people of color, and I was very overwhelmed. And I was scared about everything. I was scared about everything. I was scared to take a woman's studies class because somebody said, like, that means that you're gay. And I was like, well, then, bye-bye. And then I was like, what am I scared? I don't understand what I'm scared of. Like, but I was so scared of everything. I was scared of everything. I was scared of people thinking I was a certain way if I did a certain thing or hung out with a certain group of people.
Well, you're like desperately searching to fit in when you don't know exactly who you are.
And right.
As you grow up, you start realizing there's more people like you than you think.
And I think that when you're growing up, you don't want to be different. You just want to fit in. And then when you get older, the only thing you're trying to do is figure out how you're different.
Mm-hmm.
You go, how am I different? How do I stand out? How am I not like everybody else? So it's so weird that you push it away for so much of your life and then you are searching for it
mm-hmm.
as an adult.
I also feel like in terms of like identity is something, mm-hmm. you know, everyone wants to feel like they fit in or check a certain box.
Yeah.
And it's been honestly kind of weird. Like in this past particular few years, I felt very Venezuelan for many, many years. And then I've spent a lot of years in New York where I've made incredible friendships with mm-hmm. people that aren't Venezuelan, that are from everywhere in the world. And I've felt like not very loyal to my identity, sort of like right. letting that identity go. But at the same time, I just feel more at home with people that are from everywhere and have yeah. so many different world perspectives. And yes, that doesn't mean I'm less Venezuelan necessarily, but yeah, I'm my own type of Venezuelan, and I don't necessarily need to check all the boxes of what a Venezuelan usually means. I don't think anyone does. But right. and then I'm an American, and I'm very proud to be an American as well. And I don't check the boxes of what probably an American in middle America thinks an American should be. So I think we always seek identity as a sense of belonging, but then we realize that identity is so complex that it scares us. And I think that's what you went through in college. It's yeah. like this identity thing is very complex and I don't fit into any one place.
Right.
So what does that mean about me? And that's right. very frightening when you are just trying to find your footing in the world.
Yeah, totally.
It's a really scary thing. I think that there's, since I grew up in the city, even though I grew up and I knew, like, I'd gravitate towards Jews, I literally blocked out high school. Cannot tell you what happened in high school. Can barely name a teacher. Don't know. Like, and it's not like I didn't have a horrible time, but like, I was so involved in my Jewish youth group, I could tell you everything that happened there. Cannot tell you, like, the classes I took. Do not know. But, you know, it was one of those things where I gravitated mostly towards, I had friends of every type and in high school, but like I was hanging out with Jews so much, and now, you know, those are my friends now from where I grew up. And but I feel uncomfortable when I'm around when I go to like my boyfriend's family lives in Virginia, and it's, you know, more like, it's not rural, but it's not New York City, you know what I mean? But I feel more I feel like, oh, this is white. And there's churches everywhere. The amount of churches is sort of crazy.
It's churches and fast food is what most of America yeah. is.
Yeah. And I feel I am way more aware. Like, I even when we were walking in the city today, I was like, can you believe? Can you believe this? Like, there's all these different types of people. How wonderful. It's almost like I feel way more uncomfortable being around, not being around a ton of Jews, I can do that in my sleep, but being around like just a ton of
when everyone looks the same, yeah, it's very frightening. It's not the way it should be.
I feel comfortable in New York, where there's literally every single type of person around me, and I'm not the norm, and nobody's the norm, and it's so comfortable, and I just. There's very few places that I feel at peace, and weirdly, New York, the least peaceful place in the world, is where I feel at peace, because everyone has a different story. Everyone's so different. No one is fitting any identity.
No one's bothering you either.
No one wants to talk to you.
That crazy guy that called you a bitch, he's calling everybody a bitch, no matter what race, like, gender, or, you know, religious affiliation.
Like, no one cares. It's one of those things. I went to New Paltz, which is a school like out, you know, which it's a school like right near Woodstock. It's an hour and a half outside of the city. It's the same situation. It's just like a hippie version of it. No one gave a shit what you wear. They'd have tattoos on their face. Yeah. They didn't wear shoes. You do whatever the hell you want. I need to feel like in that space where sort of no one's looking at me at all times.
That's why
I didn't actually, don't know if I enjoyed my bat mitzvah, because I was like, this is too much attention on me. I couldn't deal with it. New York City is like the anti-bat mitzvah.
New York City is the anti-bat mitzvah, and probably the place that has the most bat mitzvahs per capita.
Exactly.
Also, what is that, you know, if you sit on a chair, you could be picked up. I mean, you could be picked up at any time. On a horror, whenever you know.
At any time. I always remind myself of that.
And you have a nagila, and you hope and you Nagiva.
Oh, that's so nice. Well, what a deep, deep con. You never know with regrets where it's going
to
lead.
You never know. You just follow that train and you go, I'm sitting on it. I'm buckled in.
And nobody talk to me.
Nobody talk to me.
This is a fucking 6 train and leave me the goddamn hell alone.
Leave me the goddamn hell alone.
Thank you so much, Joanna.
Oh, man.
Thank you, guys. You know, I love you guys so much as friends and as people and as comedians, and it's such a pleasure to be able to speak to you for this amount of time.
And such in depth, such nice. We love you.
You're a blessing. And
if you want to plug anything, please plug.
Oh, yeah, please plug.
Let's see. Well, yeah, just watch the Netflix show, episode 2 and 13. I need a job. And I have my series coming up on my own YouTube channel, Joe House 89, literally JOHOUSE89. Thank you. And Jesse and I will have some shows in New York when life is a little bit too much. Yeah, it's called Too Much,
aka Every Day.
Every day. So please watch out for that. Thank you.
Watch out. We're coming at you like a bus.
Well, thank you so much, everyone. Please, you know, listen, subscribe,
live,
and
regret.
Bye.
Forever. This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Joe Cilio, Alex Ramsey, and Brett Boehm. For more podcasts, please visit foreverdogproductions.com.